Okay, thank you very much for that introduction, Pema Vajra. Yeah, brothers in the Dharma. When I've been thinking about this talk, which I have been for a fair time now, there's been two particular things that have kept coming into my mind. First one is this. I'll just read it out for you. I entreat you, O Buddha Shakyamuni, revealer of the Dharma, and you great gurus of the past and present who have realized its essence, and you, Urgyen Sangharakshita, who have given me the gift of the Dharma. Please witness my going for refuge to the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha and grant me your blessings. So some of you may recognise this. This is the verse from the WBO Kalyanamitra Yoga. It's a verse that you recite seven times in that practice. So you see all those figures above your head. You recite this verse seven times. You receive the blessings of the Buddha and the teachers of the past, Bante, your own preceptor. And then you recite a mantra. Now this practice, I did it, the very first convention I went on in 1995. It was the main feature of the men's convention that year. And Vasantara led it every afternoon in that sports hall at Wyndham. And it made a strong impression on me. I'm not sure it's a practice that's done that much by that many people, but it's something that I've done a few times since on solitary retreats, and it's a practice I love. It communicates something very important, I think, but there's a particular phrase within it, which is, and you, Urgyen Sangharakshita, who have given me the gift of the Dharma. And there's something about this whole notion of the Dharma being a gift. It's something we receive. It's given to us. It's not something we have a right to receive. It's not something that comes to us in a kind of, from a sort of impersonal collective source. It comes through individuals who make an effort to communicate it to us and make it available to us in a way that's kind of acceptable to us, that we can hear and understand. So it's just, I love being able to recite those verses, and particularly that phrase, and you, Urgyen Sangharakshita, who have given me the gift of the Dharma. The second thing that has come to mind when I've thought about this talk is the word katanyutar, katanyutar. I think it's one of the most beautiful words in the Pali dictionary, or at least I do at the moment. I might change my mind, but it's a very, very beautiful word. Two parts to it, kata, which means that which has been done, especially to oneself. And anyutar means knowing or recognising. So Sangharakshita gives a version of it. It's often just translated as gratitude, but he says it's knowing and recognising what has been done to one for one's benefit. And he says, he makes a distinction from just the translation gratitude, because this translation implies knowledge and not just feeling. So you know and you recognise what has been done to you for your benefit by others. And again, it just evokes this whole notion for me of, yeah, the Dharma is not something, yeah, we have any right to receive. It's something that is given freely by the efforts of other people. And it's other individuals making that effort. Like I say, it's not coming to us through some cold, impersonal collective. It's individuals making the decision and the choice to communicate the Dharma. That's how it comes to us. And it's something we should be very, very grateful for. It's something I feel very, very grateful for. It suddenly dawned on me about a week ago that the reason those two things have been coming to my mind every time I think about this talk is because I want to express a lot of gratitude. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time expressing my own gratitude to the people who've brought the Dharma and given the Dharma to me. I'd like to spend a lot of time rejoicing in lots and lots of people. I'm going to try and keep it concise because there are other things I've got to talk about as well. But I'm particularly thinking of those who've helped me to understand the Dharma, who've communicated something of the Dharma to me at different times in my spiritual career. So starting just with my Mitra study leaders, back in Bristol in 1988, my very first study leader was Tejananda. He used to go up to his little garret flat in Clifton, right at the top of the stairs. I always found Tejananda very good-humoured and knowledgeable, very knowledgeable about the Dharma, very good-humoured, quite sort of sparky and good fun to be with. And I made a good connection with him that's remained. I don't see a lot of Tejananda, but he's a good friend of mine. And he gave me the draft of his book. You know, he wrote that book, A Path to Awakening, as a result of just doing the Dharma study with him. I read the draft, and we've just made a connection through that Mitra study group. So I'm very grateful to him for having been my first Mitra study leader. Also, did some study with Vimala Jyoti. I don't know, you may not know Vimala Jyoti, a New Zealander. He was in Bristol for a period of time, and not an obvious study leader, but he was really into Tai Chi and massage. Really, really, he had quite a gift for those things. But he led me through at least one series of the Mitra study course. Very engaging way, very keen to kind of make a connection with me in the group, which I can still remember. And then I also studied with Pranyananda, I think both before and after ordination. I think I sat in on some Mitra groups that he did after I'd been ordained, as well as studying with him before ordination. Pranyananda prepares very, very thoroughly. So when you're in a Mitra group with him, he's got really good handouts. He's done a lot of preparation and homework, as it were. And he's got a really good knowledge of the original texts, particularly the Pali texts, but also the Vimalakirti Nidesha, a sort of speciality of his. It's really good to sort of imbibe that detailed knowledge of the Dharma from him. I'm going to carry on. It's going to be a reasonably good list. I was very fortunate when I first came here to Pamaloka. I came again in 1988, just as Subhuti moved into the retreat centre here. And I got to spend a lot of time with Subhuti. I studied with him many, many times. But a particularly strong impression of studying Chapter 1 of the Survey of Buddhism in June of 1988. It was actually before it was a Going for Refuge retreat. I think it was the retreat that sort of led to it being incorporated in the Going for Refuge retreats. We went through the whole of Chapter 1 in about 8 days, which is quite something. And I just remember, Subhuti's brilliant in many ways. He's just incredibly good at getting right to the sort of heart or essence of a text. Sometimes I've studied with him, you know, they're quite obscure texts, and he can bring out the meaning of it in a way that's very, very relevant to me. Gets right to the heart of it and sort of cuts through sort of secondary issues and straight to the heart of things. But when I studied Chapter 1 of the Survey with him, a very sort of visionary experience. I felt I was meeting the Buddha. That, I don't know, you probably all studied it, you know, Chapter 1 of the Survey. It sort of opens up this sort of vision of space and time and the Buddha sort of emerging, you know, from within space and time as this great sort of central principle in the universe. So it's sort of meeting the Buddha through Bhante's writing, and then having it really strongly evoked by Subhuti and Subhuti's brilliance of mind, really, and wonderful energy and vigour that Subhuti has when he leads study. The other thing I loved about studying with Subhuti on that retreat, you'd be going sort of deeply into the Dharma, and then 5 minutes later he'd be rolling around on the settee in hysterics, being tickled by Chittapala. You just had this great kind of contrast. It was light, it was fun, and it was incredibly sort of deep and straight to the point of things. So very, very grateful to Subhuti. Like I say, I've studied with him many, many times, and yeah, I think he's a very, very gifted study leader. I also had good fortune to go on a lot of Mitra study leaders' retreats. It's a shame they don't happen any longer. They used to happen at Vajrakuta when Ratnagiri. Well, lots of people have done them over the years. But I went up around 2000, 2001, 2002, did a whole batch of them, three of them a year. And there was something about just going through that material again, having already been through it as a Mitra, which was very good, really sort of deepened my understanding, strengthened my faith in what I was doing. But there were some very good study leaders again there, Ratnaguna particularly. He was living there. Fantastic sort of clarity of mind. He really knows what he thinks about things, and he's able to articulate that very, very clearly and fully. We were very fortunate to have him on the men's event last weekend, and he gave a couple of brilliant talks about the Vimalakirti Nidesha. He's got insights into that text I don't think anybody else has got. He's very, very original mind, thinks about things very much from his... comes from his own experience. He's a very, very original man in terms of the way he thinks about the Dharma, but not in a superficial way. It's very sort of grounded in the Dharma as well. I study with a buyer a number of times as well. And a buyer's got this great ability of, he sort of looks you in the eye and says, yes, but what do you really mean by that Satchanama? Or, you know, he sort of won't let you get off with just sort of trotting things out or going through the motions. He really sort of wants to get to the heart. He's got a sort of sparkle in his eye when he looks at you. And also Ratnaprabha. I don't know if Ratnaprabha's here. Is it Ratnaprabha here? Yeah. Yes, studied with Ratnaprabha up there. Ratnaprabha's got a fantastic memory and recall, and it's not just of the Dharma. He seems to have a brilliant recall of just about everything. It's just amazing to be around in a study group. You know, he talks brilliantly about literature, about science, about history, as well as the Dharma. And yet he wears it all with a real lightness of touch. There's no sort of heaviness or seriousness or... It's very modest, very unassuming, but a fantastic memory. It's just great having that kind of at your fingertips when you study, all that sort of resource just there. And I'm going to keep going. More recently, I've had the good fortune to study with Padmavajra on Mitra Convener's meetings. Come up here often 3 times a year, we're studying with Padmavajra. Been through quite a few different texts. Anything from a Sangha's chapter on ethics to the Bodhisattva vows to the Tathagatagarbha Sutra, Ratnaguna Samchayagata. We went through the Guru Yoga, both the text of it and the practice one time. Padmavajra's got a very, very wide range of knowledge of the whole Buddhist tradition. It's amazing what he knows and knows very well. He's also a brilliant storyteller. You know, he's able to turn words on a page into a story that you can live and breathe and feel. If you've heard him talk about the Chan and Zen masters, or you've heard him talk about Padmasambhava or some of the Mahasiddhas, he brings the story alive in a way that you can really feel and relate to very, very strongly. It's a great ability of his. He also knows Bante's teaching and approach to the Dharma very, very well, and he's always telling stories about Bante. He studied obviously a lot with Bante, had a lot of contact with Bante. And you get this lovely feel of his relationship to Bante. And often he's able to, again, bring the words of Bante's teaching alive by just giving you that little bit more context. If he's, you know, he knows when it was said in a particular seminar, or brings it alive. And suddenly you sort of get something that you haven't quite got in Bante's teaching before. Or I get that. And he also has just got great love for Bante and great faith and devotion in Bante. And I've found that's just really awakened and strengthened that in me. It's been a real joy to be around him these past few years. And then finally, I have had the very good fortune of studying with Bante a number of times in the Mitra Convener's meetings over the last couple of years. We've had 3 of the meetings where he's come and led study for us on lectures of his. I never thought I'd have that opportunity. You know, a few years ago his health was getting worse and, you know, thought he might die. Didn't expect to study with him. So it's been a real boon and blessing to have that opportunity. One of the 2 of the things I've noticed with him in studying, he's completely unflappable. You know, we'll all get a bit excited about things. 2 or 3 people start talking at once and he'll just sort of turn and give his attention to one person and then to another. And then to another. He doesn't get overexcited or intoxicated or anything like that. He's just very, very steady and unflappable in the way he approaches the study and relates to people in the group. He's also incredibly patient. People can ask some very dumb questions at times. Probably myself included. And also with Bante, you get the impression he's answered some questions. He must have answered them 20, 30, 40, 50 times. Maybe more. He's just answered the same questions. But you never see a flash of irritation or impatience pass across his face. You know, even if it's something that he's written about, he's talked about, he's taught, he's answered so many times. He's just incredibly patient. And very, very mindful in the study group. So just sort of noticing those qualities. Obviously also, when Yonavarcha put it very well, it's a bit like he talks from the Dharma. He doesn't talk about the Dharma, he talks from it. It's like he's got this kind of store of experience in him that he's talking from rather than just about. So yes, I feel very, very fortunate to have been given the gift of the Dharma by Bante and to have that chance to have studied with him personally. It's been a real blessing to me in my life the last couple of years. So it's quite a long preface to the talk, but I think it's a very important one, because, like I say, the Dharma only comes to us because of the efforts of other individual beings, other individual human beings, making a choice to communicate the Dharma to us. I think it's very important to remember that. Okay, so that's the kind of preface, the preamble. I'm going to say a little bit more, obviously, about the course itself. I want to give some history to the course, the Mitra course generally. A bit about how we've arrived at the course and the sort of one or two of the principles embodied in it. The title, obviously, very important, we're going to get the title sorted out. The structure of the course, and then a bit about content, and then a few sort of concluding thoughts after that. So that's what I'm going to do. So yes, the history of Mitra study, I think it's quite good sometimes just to kind of paint the picture of the history. It's arisen, obviously, as our movement's arisen, and it's developed over time. I think in the 1970s there wasn't such a thing as Mitra study. Basically, you just studied with Bhante, or you were at his talks. You know, you would have had that opportunity. The movement was fairly small. That's what would have happened. In the early 1980s, the actual first Mitra study course was developed by Deva Mitra. He was overall Mitra convener, and he saw one of the needs of Mitras was to get a good, solid grounding in the Dharma. I think it was 1984 that he came up with the first course, the first Mitra course. And he based that course on his own experience of studying the Dharma. So he just listened to Bhante's lectures again and again and again. And that's how he chose to structure the course. It was based on those 9 series of Bhante's lectures. I'm going to spend a bit of time rejoicing in Deva Mitra, actually. I think he gave an awful lot to the movement in that time. He was overall Mitra convener for maybe, I don't know, 20 years, something like that. He was very keen on this particular Mitra course, and I think it has been a great gift to us that we had that course, and it was studied for 15 years before there was any sort of modifications to it. Yeah, it's a bit of a precept of mine. I just like to rejoice in the founders of our own movement. I sort of consider that founding generation, the people who ordained in the 1970s, people who kind of gave the movement shape and form and kind of created it in a way that we've subsequently been able to come in contact with. So Deva Mitra, when he chose the course, I think the course has had it's not just an individual impact. Probably all of us have studied those lectures, I would have thought. We've been through those series. And no doubt it's had an impact on us individually. It's given us a kind of a language and a framework of through which we can understand and approach the Dharma. But I think it's also given a shared language for us as a spiritual community, as a gana, as Padmavajra was talking about it this morning. And it's very important that we have that shared language of ideas and of myths and teachings. That we sort of drawn on, you know, myths like building the Buddha land, very important myth that inspired the movement in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Perhaps it's sort of fallen a bit out of fashion these days. Just the phrase vision and transformation, these are kind of key things that have become part of our collective life. And they sort of enable us to communicate with each other. They give us this kind of collective language, which is very important for the life of the Sangha. You know, we're not just all talking our own individual languages. We've got this shared framework of ideas and of myths and of archetypes that Bhante's introduced to us. And I think Deva Mitra was very good at choosing that and supporting that course and maintaining it over quite a period of time. It was also originally supposed to be supplemented by a study of Pali texts, which dropped by the way. But that was part of the original course as it was devised. So that went on for about 15 years. Like I say, probably a lot of us studied it. Probably a lot of us led study on it as well. In 1998 and 99, Ratnaguna undertook a revision of that course. I think Deva Mitra asked him to do that. So basically, he came up with a slightly modified version of that course. It wasn't major changes. He dropped the aspects of Buddhist psychology series. He conflated the two evolution series into one. And he introduced series on the Pali suttas, selected suttas from the Pali canon, emphases and restatements of traditional Buddhist teachings and Buddhism for the modern world. So it wasn't a kind of a radical change, it was just a slight change to that course. And I think most people who did that probably, you know, considered it as an improvement. That ran for about 4 years. And then in 2003, we changed the whole Mitra community. You know, it was a fairly kind of chaotic and time of upheaval in the movement, 2002, 2003. There was this sort of phrase, open up the movement and intensify the order. And the Mitra community changed in order to open up the movement. It was felt that the kind of bureaucracy and criteria for becoming a Mitra, you know, was actually sort of putting people off. So it was opened up in that way. And with the opening up of the Mitra community, people thought it was time to revise the course as well, change the course. Probably also because other things were going on in the order at that time. There was a desire to change the course. And there was the idea, although it never came off, of what was called the Mandala course. So you may have heard of the Mandala course. You know, but it was an idea, and it never really got off the ground. Although one part of it did. Vedanya, I don't know where he is, he's here somewhere, isn't he? He came up with a foundation year several years ago, which has been used widely since then and is now incorporated into this new Dharma training course as well. But the rest of the materials for the Mandala course, nobody had the time. Individual study leaders didn't have the time. Basically, it never got off the ground. And then the last few years, there's just been a bit of an uncertainty about what's going on with training for Mitras. A lot of people have just gone back and done the old Mitra study lecture series of Bantes in the absence of anything else. So in 2006, the European Chairs Assembly felt that it was a priority to develop some materials for the course. You know, they realised it wasn't going to happen unless somebody was, you know, took on to do it. So they advertised for somebody to take that on. And I got the job. I got the job in 2007, and I've been working on it since then. I've consulted quite widely. It's mainly been with men's and women's Mitra conveners. It's also with the European Chairs Assembly, and to some degree with members of the Preceptors College. So that's the kind of consultation that I've done. It's not been an order-wide thing. That would be far too kind of complicated to bring off. One of the key principles that I've tried to sort of stick to in the course, although this only became clear to me when I went to the international retreat last year, and Bante gave this talk, I don't know if some of you may have been there, he gave a talk on the seven factors for stability of the Sangha from the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, very important teaching, the Buddha. The first two of those factors are meeting regularly and infrequently. We're assembling regularly and frequently, just coming together and spending time together as a Sangha. Second one, meeting and passing in harmony. And the third one, which is the important one with regards to this course, do not authorise what has not been authorised. Do not abolish what has been authorised. Sometimes the word rules is in there. So these are the rules that govern the Sangha or sort of guide the Sangha. So the Buddha is saying, do not authorise what has not been authorised and do not abolish what has been authorised. So I think it's a very, very important principle about being aware of things when we try to change things in the Sangha. Bante, when he was talking about it, he said, well, it's not that you can't change anything. He said, well, obviously certain things in Buddhist history have been changed, some for the better and maybe some for the worse. But he said that change should be in accordance with what has gone before, and that there should be continuity and harmony with what has gone before. So in a way, it's a kind of a plea for conservatism to some degree, with a small c. Saying, yeah, when you change things, you don't do it for its own sake. It's not revolution, it's evolution. And that change is in accordance and in the spirit of what has already been in existence. So there should be continuity and harmony with what has gone before. Now, I think that applies very strongly to this course, this Mitra course. It's something, as I said, probably we've all been through. We've all trained in it. We've all maybe led, well, not all of us, but some of us will have led people through it. It's an important part of our Sangha. It's actually given us our identity, our kind of collective and individual identity to some degree. And it's important not to do something too radical and revolutionary and just jettison the past. But obviously there's also been a desire to introduce some new things too, not just sort of stick exactly with the old course as David Mitchell designed it. So one of the things that I hope this course does, it has both this sense of stability and continuity. There are lots of things in there that you're all going to recognise. But it also does have new developments that are responding to, you know, some new teachings coming into our movement, new developments, new interests of certain order members, groups of people within the order and movement. I hope it gets that balance right. I'm also hoping it's sort of getting a middle way between too linear a course. So the old course, it was, you know, just this one way through the course. But also, well, the other pole is sort of too much choice and too open and a bit of a lack of coherence. I think that's what the mandala course effectively was. It was too kind of loose and open. So also title, so we've had a bit of a play on this one already. You know, I get ribbed about it all the time. I am trying to introduce a new title for the course. So the old course used to just get referred to as the Mitra Study Course. I don't know if there was if that was an official title, but that's obviously how we referred to it. I am suggesting this new course is called the FWBO Dharma Training Course for Mitras. Yeah, nice snappy little title. And if it's going to be shortened, which no doubt it will, I'm going to suggest it's just called the Dharma Training Course. I'd like us to just think of it as the Dharma Training Course. Part of the reason for this is it's not just a study course. It's got a lot of study in it, but it's not just a study course. It is broader than that. There's more material on our devotional practices. There's more material on meditation. There's meditation modules. There's one or two modules that don't have a kind of obvious sort of learning outcomes, as it were. They're just sort of opening up areas for exploration. And there'll be audio-visual material and things in one or two of the modules. So it's broader. But it also draws on the meaning of the Pali word sekha, or the word sikha, sikhapadam, as in the precepts, training principles. It's just sort of trying to bring out this notion that we're all in training, not just training for the mitras. We're all in training. We're all still learning the Dharma. Traditionally in Pali, the word sekha is applied to anyone short of arahantship. So it's said that everybody is in training learning the Dharma. So the Dharma training course is just trying to bring that out. Yeah. And I think it'd be great if it can be known as that. I mean, it's in the lap of the gods. It might get, you know, shortened to something completely different. But that's what I would like. You make me very happy if you do call it the Dharma Training Course. Time will tell, no doubt. Briefly, the structure of the course. It's now a four-year course. So people are becoming mitras earlier than they used to. The change in the mitra community, generally people become mitras a bit earlier. So the first year is covering things that may have been covered in sort of pre-Mitra groups before. The first year is this foundation year, which is just has a simple straight-through structure to it. And we're hoping that everyone will be doing the foundation year. There are three subsequent years. Now those years have seven modules, of which we're asking that people do a minimum of four. So there is an element of choice. So we're trying to get the best of both worlds. There's structure and coherence, but there is also an element of choice. People can pursue things that they're particularly interested in. If people want to do more than four modules, great. It's a minimum of four. If people want to spend longer and go through all seven, that's fantastic. If they want to go through it all four modules a year and then come back and finish off modules, fantastic too. I'll just briefly say what the aims of the course are as well. I mean, it's probably fairly sort of obvious. The main aim of the course is to give people a systematic and thorough training in the Dharma as taught and practiced in the FWBO. subsidiary aims, it's about creating a meaningful Sangha context in which people can really explore the Dharma together. Support for a deepening meditation practice. Giving people the skills to study and reflect on the Dharma themselves and also beyond when they finish the course. They've got skills that they can continue to apply. And also to provide inspiration for practice. So those are the kind of basic aims of the course. Now, I've got a handout which Mitch conveners are going to pass out. So it's the time to... Okay, this is just a brief kind of synopsis of the course. There will be a guide to the course being published in probably in April, which will be a fuller overview of the contents and structure of the course, and that will be available to give to Mitras. But it's just something for you to look at as I go through it. So I'm just going to go through it relatively briefly. So we have this foundation here. As I said, Vedanya basically compiled this foundation. He wrote quite a bit of it, but some of it is compiled from Bhante's writings and writings of other order members. Also some Pali suttas in there as well. I'd really like to thank Vedanya for doing that course. He's done it purely out of love. He's received no financial support for it. Vedanya is very, very passionate about the Dharma. And he's just given himself he just got that course together. He got the first version of it together a few years ago. When the Mandala course was floundering and nobody else was doing much about it, he just went ahead and got this foundation year together. It's been used by quite a lot of centres, generally with very good feedback. And then last year we did an edit and a slight review and rewrite on one or two things and added some things to it. I'd really like to thank Vedanya for all the work he's done on that foundation year. So this is already available. Like I say, some of you are probably using it at your centres, even now. Part one is material on going for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. Key core stuff. Part two, ethics. Particularly a sort of practical look at how to practice the five precepts. It's structured largely around the three declarations that you make when you become a Mitra, so that you are a Buddhist. So this first section, going for refuge to Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, is around that. That you're practicing the precepts, so the precepts are here. And then also the third declaration is that you're at home, you consider the FWBO to be your spiritual home, which is in part five. So we've got five precepts. Part three on meditation, there's both stuff on the system of meditation and from the Samanapala Sutta, the kind of traditional context for meditation. And then quite a bit of practical material on working in meditation and working with the Metta Bhavana and the mindfulness of breathing. So stuff just supporting people in their meditation practice. Part four on wisdom, so introducing just really central Buddhist ideas on the wheel of life, conditionality, karma and rebirth, and finishing with some material on the bodhicitta. And then part five looks at the distinctive features of the FWBO and a bit about Sangha Rakshita's notion of the unity of Buddhism. And then we've added this material on our devotional text. So I felt one of the things this course needs to do, it is training people in our devotional practices as well. So there's a week looking at the Sevenfold Puja, the actual verses of it, where it comes from, what its structure is, that it's a bodhicitta practice. Week on the Tiratanavandana, looking at the meaning of the text itself. Week on the threefold puja dedication ceremony, refuges and precepts. So basically people know our basic liturgy when they've done it. Year two, quite a few things that we all know and love. Vision and transformation. Bodhisattva ideal. I've had the good fortune to go through a lot of these series again in the last couple of years preparing this. There's still fantastic series of lectures, and I'm hoping that people aren't just going to go straight for the new stuff because they haven't done it before. You know, Bante's lecture series are still brilliant expositions of the Dharma and got so much to offer, so I do hope they're still going to be taken up and explored very fully. What is the Sangha is a new module, but it is basically looking at the stuff to do with the group, positive group, spiritual community, true individual, third order of consciousness, all that sort of material, based on the book. Nature of Existence 1 is a more detailed look at conditionality, a central teaching of the Buddha, based on the Pali text. Steve Ann's doing some very good work on preparing that module. It will be reflective as well. A lot of the modules, there's trying to get people to reflect on the material more. So there'll be exercises and reflections that people will be doing to sort of get to grips with conditionality more fully. Way to Wisdom, exploration of wrong views and right views that Nyana Ketu's been working on, largely based on Bante's stuff in Know Your Mind, but he's also developing a couple of other weeks on Madhyamaka and Yogacara material on views. Turning the mind to the Dharma, this is material on the four reminders, the four mind-turning thoughts. I'm just going through this with my group at the moment. It's very, very good material. It's based on a really great series of talks by the team Ratnaloka team, Dharma Dinner, Vajradarshini, Ratnadharani and Maitreyi. They're excellent talks. And again, the idea is to spend more time reflecting on this material rather than being too discursive about it. It's also material on levels and dimensions of going for refuge. Then a module on mindfulness, the way of mindfulness, which Karma Shila is still preparing, based on the Satipatthana Sutta. Going to be a more practical and meditative exploration of it. Yeah. So that's kind of new material to the course. Yeah, three letters of gold, letters of fire. That's based on Bante's aphorism. The words of the Dhammapada are literal truth and should be inscribed on our hearts in letters of gold or fire. So it's particularly trying to get people to read the text and read it on a daily basis, really take the words of the Dhammapada to heart. It's such a fantastic text and lends itself to memory, taking in some of those verses. There's lots of very memorable verses in the Dhammapada. Also based on brilliant talks by Pamavadra and some stuff on the Buddha Varga from Bante. Drama of Cosmic Enlightenment, again something we all know and love. A brilliant series of lectures by Bante. Chittapala's preparing that. Freedom of Heart is a meditation module, basically a 6-week meditation course on the Brahmavihara's four mitras. Kula Prabhu, who's done a lot of retreats on that at Taraloka over quite a few years, is preparing that. That will include audio meditations, MP3 files that you can listen to and practice at home, as well as explore in the class and the groups themselves. Nature of Existence 2, Buddhist Visions of Reality, is building on the stuff on conditionality, obviously in the Year 2 module. Looking at a wider range of Buddhist sort of visions of reality. Vedanya again doing that one. Then you've got this module, Sangha Action, the History of the FWO. This is a new module. This came out of a meeting I had with the Women Mitra conveners, and we were just talking, and it's sort of this module emerged out. It would be really good to have something just about our spiritual community and about our founder. So it's not kind of got particular learning outcomes or anything like that. It's just a chance to explore sides to Sangha Action that we don't come across just through his teachings. And for people to get a feel for him, obviously a lot of mitras now won't have met him, aren't going to meet him. Also stuff on the history and development of our movement. Surya Prabha's DVDs, one of the things they're very good at is they introduce all these people from what I call the founding generation of our movement, all the people ordained in the 70s who basically created the institutions and things that we've all come to benefit from. I think it's really important that we know who those people are and we rejoice and celebrate those people and what they've done. So I hope that will be a significant part of it. And then also it will include stuff from local sanghas. So probably most sanghas have got some sort of archive or some sort of material on the history of the Manchester Buddhist Centre or the Bristol Buddhist Centre or whatever. And I'd like if the Mitra has actually just spent a bit of time exploring that, and people told the story of their own centres, and in a way rejoiced in the heroes and the heroines who've made it happen, people who've given a lot to it, the founders of that situation. I think it'd be really, really positive if we had a stronger sense of that in our community. How it happens, it's not, you know, it's not going to be, you know, there's basically going to be various resources, and it'll be up to the group leaders to choose how to explore it all. But, you know, you might even invite older members from the early days of your Sangha to come and talk to the Mitras and say what it was like and give them a bit more of a feel for it. An interconnected world, it's not called engaged Buddhism. Interconnected world, Buddhist ethics and contemporary issues. Bante's not happy with the term engaged Buddhism. You know, he thinks all Buddhism is engaged, so we're not calling it engaged Buddhism. But in a way, this is probably the most developmental of all the modules here. It's a team of people coming up with material. It is probably the most exploratory, and it's going into new areas, big areas. I think it's going to be an exciting module, but it, in a way, I sort of see it as something that will develop over time as well. It might not be, you know, it's not going to be the final word on these issues to start with. It's sort of taking a step into a new direction, obviously something that a lot of people do find inspiring and engaging. Faith, symbols and the imagination, looking at the non-rational, super-rational aspects of Buddhist tradition. Quite a practical exploration from what I can gather, from what Vedanya tells me. So again, just trying to get people to engage with symbols, engage with colours, engage with sounds, you know, rather than a kind of a conceptual exploration of it. Hope you're still with me. Year four, Know Your Mind. Brilliant book. Again, probably most of us are familiar with that material. Really good way of deepening people's exploration of Buddhist ethics. Based on Know Your Mind, Sudarshini's been compiling that material. Two great Mahayana sutras, again, two of Bante's lecture series, Vimalakirti Nideshara, Sutra of Golden Light. Towards Insight, Reflection and Meditation. So Ratnaguna has written, this is a completely new module, he's written six essays for this. New essays, it's his speciality in a way. Ratnaguna, very clear thinker, done a lot of reflecting himself. Very, very good material, plus quite a lot of suggested exercises for people to engage within the groups, outside of the groups, encouraging people to reflect, teaching them the skills they need to reflect upon the Dharma more deeply. Evolutionary Buddhism, which Ratnaprabha's doing. Bante was still very keen to have evolutionary Buddhism. There was a bit of debate amongst the Mitra conveners and people as to whether this was needed any longer. I went to see Bante to talk about it. I had a very interesting response from him. I sort of went along with this idea that evolution, the higher evolution, was this sort of nice idea that he'd come up with to try to put the Dharma in modern discourse that might appeal to people in the modern world. You know, as though it was a kind of a theory. And his response to me, the way I remember him saying it, is he said, well, no, it's a fact. It's not just some nice theory designed to attract people with a scientific background. It's a fact. And I took him to mean that, well, I think he then clarified a minute, that it's just how he experiences things, which rather sort of, one of those ones that sort of took me back a bit when he said it, because I'd gone along with a certain idea, and he just saying, well, that's his, it's a fact, and that's how he experiences the world in terms of evolution. Then there's the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, so a study of Shantideva with a reduced version of the text, you know, cutting out some of the more graphic stuff on the hell realms and various things, but also making it manageable to go through. Again, Vedanya's done a fantastic job on this, really good material. He's done a comprehensive guide for people who want to lead groups on this as well. Yeah, but you know, Shantideva's text is a very important part of our spiritual community, and you know, Bante's approach to the Dharma. Then you've got the Tantric Buddhism, creative symbols of Tantric Buddhism. Again, another of these modules we probably all know and love. And then finally, this one, Teachers from the Refuge Tree. So this is more about inspiration from the lives of the teachers. Could include the Arahants or Bante's teachers, and obviously all the historical teachers above. the Buddha on the refuge tree. Probably be people presenting projects, so they'll go away and then come back and present an evening, you know, with a life story and, you know, what they find inspiring about this character and perhaps its relevance for us practicing now. Yeah, so that's an outline of the course, and I think some very good material in it. So I've just got a few more points to make before concluding. Some of these are just a bit more prosaic points, but I'll just go through them. All of the modules are being peer-reviewed by at least one man and one woman. Usually it's Mitra conveners or experienced group leaders. So they're all being reviewed before being made available. They're not all ready yet. Some of them are, but not all of them are. So it's a launch, but it's not all done. So I'm afraid you're not going to be able to use all of them, although there's some already available. I've just sent a whole load more modules off to Chandradasa, and they'll be coming out steadily, the remainder of them, over the next few months. It's all going to be available online at the address on your handout. Chandradasa is dealing with the online stuff, so if you have any technical issues, he's the man to deal with. The way the material is made available, there are student notes, which are what the Mitras will work from. So that's their kind of guide to each of the modules. So they'll download a file, print it off. That's got suggested questions for the material, introductory stuff, contextual stuff, further reading, and sometimes excerpts or suttas in there as well. Yeah. There's also what we're calling teacher's notes, which is only available with password access, you know, but you'll be able to get that. The teacher's notes just give hints and suggestions for what you might do, perhaps other resources in them as well. You may or may not want to use them, but I would suggest you read them anyway, even if you don't end up using them, using the suggestions in there. So basically trying to support people taking up the course. I know there are quite a lot of people perhaps new to leading the course, might find it very helpful just to have some suggestions as to how to go about that. There's going to be a guide to the course come out in April, and also a teacher's handbook, which will have suggestions, again, more general suggestions about leading groups, kinds of things that go on in groups. Different suggestions for people who are leading the groups. Dharmapala College are doing a lot of training retreats this year. They've got a fantastic program together. Dharmaloka's done a great job, got a lot of very experienced order members leading various retreats on different parts of the course. They're not obligatory. You don't have to do them before you can lead the course. But they'd be great. It'd be great if people can take advantage of those retreats and get up to Dharmapala College this year. Decisions about the course are all taken at a local level. There's no kind of central policing of this course. Once it's out there, it's up to you how you go about using it, how you decide which modules to choose and which not to choose. You know, I hope that will go on in consultation with Mitra conveners and with other group leaders, you know, not just chosen in a sort of an arbitrary way. But it is just to be taken at a local level, yeah? Also, the course is going to be reviewed in 3 years' time, so it's not a fixed and final course. In 3 years' time, hopefully the chairman will fund a review. There'll be editing and improvements. It may be that one or two of the modules don't work that well and need dropping or a major rewrite. So it's not a sort of full and final thing. Also, the new structure, it allows for new things to be added to it. So hopefully this kind of structure can sort of evolve over time as well. And I just want to conclude with one or two things about actually running one of these groups. My impression is that for the sort of the success of this course, 50% of it is in the quality of the materials, 50% of it is what happens in the group and how the material is brought alive within the group. Yeah? So there's a lot of responsibility on the individual group leaders to make the material relevant to the particular group you've got. Groups vary so much. You can't kind of tailor the material for all the different kinds of groups and all the different kinds of people you get in the groups. That is the work of the group leader. Yeah. So if you're going to be leading a group, yeah, you need to kind of work to bring it alive, bring your own feeling for that material to bear in the group. You need to make it relevant to the particular individuals you have in your group. You might have quite a range of individuals in the group. You know, you get people of a more intellectual background, people, feeling types, you know, you get all different kinds of people. The group leader has to kind of get them engaged and get them relating to the material. So if you know, if people are saying, oh, I can't get into this material, well, get them into it. It's your responsibility in a way to make that happen. I think it's very important to keep the initiative as a group leader. Sometimes I get the impression people think there's this, you know, sort of monolithic course coming out and they're going to have to sort of do, you know, do this course in a particular kind of way. Well, it's very important to keep the initiative with the material, not sort of get bowed under by the weight of it. Ultimately, if the material's getting in the way of you exploring the Dharma with your group, chuck it out. That's the sort, you know, the bottom line. If it is getting in the way, you know, do something different, do something that is going to get the Dharma across to people. Obviously, it's very unlikely that that's going to happen, but I think it's important to kind of keep that perspective on what you're doing. Also, in the groups, I think there's two things going on. There's this systematic exploration of the Dharma, but there's also the whole development of Sangha. The Mitra groups are where most people will make their peer friendships. I think particularly in the light of less communities, less right livelihoods, less full-time situations where people are meeting intensively, the group provides a kind of a focus for people, for peer friendships and friendships with order members. So there's those two things going on. There's the exploration of the Dharma and there's creation of Sangha going on as well. Yeah, so I would, I hope that, I mean, a lot of you here are probably already doing it or have already done it. You've taken a group through, a Mitra group through this kind of material. It's a fantastic thing to do. It is one of the highlights of my week. I've got a group that's been going for a couple of years. We do other things as well. We, you know, occasionally we go out Shakespeare plays, or we've done a weekend retreat together. It's a great focus for the Sangha as well as an exploration of the Dharma. As we heard this morning, this whole thing of gathering a community, in a way, you could see your Mitra group, if you decide to take one on at some point, even if, you know, it's in a few years down the line. Well, that's your gunna, that's your community to work with, to bring people together, to create a harmony amongst them and to share the Dharma with them. You know, people need this. They need this sort of deeper exploration of the Dharma, but they need the kind of context of friendship and Sangha as well. So it's a fantastic opportunity. It's not the only opportunity to share the Dharma and to create Sangha. It's not obviously the only way we can do that, but it is one very, very good way we can do it. To take a group through this course over a number of years, to build friendships with people, make connections with them outside the group. Very, very wonderful thing that we can do for others. In the terms of this weekend, it's a fantastic opportunity to pass on the lamp of the Dharma or the torch of the Dharma. We might not be the great Bodhisattva described in the Vimalakirti Nidesha who lights thousands and thousands of lamps, but we can light the lamps of a few people. Well, maybe more than a few people, but you know, if we take on a group, we can, hopefully bring the Dharma alive for them, pass on the torch of the Dharma to them, give them the gift of the Dharma.